Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. This is episode 180. Dave, how are you doing this week?
I am doing great. I just got back from a little short vacation in the mountains, and I'm heading out next week on vacation, which I'm very much looking forward to. Need a little time to recharge the batteries, so.
Nice. You're sounding very European. It's funny, I was on a call with my mastermind group today, and the two other guys are here in Europe, and we were like, okay, so when's the next time we can talk? August 20th.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, I'm just going to be gone for the whole month of July.
Yeah, that's interesting. I know that, my July is looking pretty weird as well. I have a couple of camping trips on there. We've got the big trip down to Costa Rica with the family and just other activities. Like pretty much every weekend for me now in July is booked. It's just gone.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, it's great. It's a great time of year to be able to unwind and stuff. Business is typically slower in the summer, so, you know, you're not missing as much as if it was, you know, beginning or the end of the year.
Unless you're masochistic like me and have a release plan for your classified plugin in the middle of the month, you know.
Nice. When you're not there.
Well, no, I was going to have it, like, it was supposed to be today. We've moved that because I'm going to be out of town, and that made my support person nervous, and rightly so, because if something went sideways, I wouldn't necessarily be there to coordinate it. And
this
is a pretty big release. I think it would be appropriate for me to be around. If it was a minor one, I'd be like, toss it out the door, you guys handle it, but not this one. This one's been in the making for a long time. So, yeah, I postponed that till July 16th.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a couple updates from my side. The most exciting, I think, is we are hiring. I don't know if we talked about this on the last episode, because it's been a while since just you and I talked.
I've seen it on Twitter where you're talking about that and Jonathan's talking about that, but I don't know if we mentioned it.
Yeah, so, you know, part of the Tiny Seed and you know, some of the funding we got there is we are hiring a full-time marketer. So we are calling it a full-stack marketer. And this person will be doing a bit of everything, but really looking for someone with a really strong competency in like inbound marketing. So content, SEO, keyword research, kind of funnel visualization and working funnels. So if you are that person or if you know that person, send them our way. We have a job posting I'll put in the show notes here. Where you can check out more details and stuff. But it's very exciting to be kind of interviewing and talking to some of the people that we're talking to because they're like super high caliber marketers, much better than me, which is cool and intimidating at the same time. But it's a really cool process to be going through.
Yeah, that's most excellent. I hope you find somebody good. So I guess as far as other updates go, you know, I have had a couple of issues with recapture here over the last month, and today was another one of them. That Cloudflare outage that has been kicking everybody in the teeth kicked us in the balls as well. For the second time, it was like, I mean, after it happened this time today, I was like, oh man, you're not going to make me switch off of Cloudflare, because we're using them for DNS and proxying. And it works great to keep a lot of spammy, crappy traffic off the site. And it's been otherwise a very, you know, low friction kind of thing. But it doesn't really matter whether you are like a paid account or a free account. We happen to be free accounts. Everybody got screwed. So, you know, it kind of makes me think to myself, you know, if this happens again, what am I going to do as an option to get off of Cloudflare? Because I'm not going to keep putting up with this because, you know, 2-hour outages, 1-hour outages. That's, you know, that's big stuff.
Yeah. What did they say was the problem? Do you know, or is it too early? I mean, for today's, it's probably too early to know what the problem was.
No, they didn't. So it's one of those very vague, we've, you know, fixed the problem and we're monitoring, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
I got a hold of their incident report and it just was very vague on details. So, you know, they're, whatever it is, for whatever reason, they're not being that transparent about it. Maybe somebody has better information than me, but this is what I got directly from Cloudflare status app.com or appstatus.com. Mm-hmm. It was forwarded to me from another service that was also affected. I think it like nailed Bare Metrics. It probably got Drip. It definitely got Shopify. So yeah, I mean, everybody was in a bad, bad way today if you were on any of those services.
That's tough. That's tough. We don't use any Cloudflare, but we host both of our marketing sites for Podcast Motor and for Castos. They're both WordPress sites, like on the front end, on Kensta. And it has been a wonderful platform to host on. Like, we moved from WP Engine to Kensta, and it's just wonderful. But they host, their back end is Google App Engine. And about 2 weeks ago, Google App Engine went down for several hours.
Yeah, I remember that one, yeah.
Because that affected Shopify too, I know. And I was just like, I mean, you can't berate them too much. It's not their fault, right? But you're like, dude, this is my entire business. Like, I mean, it's not my entire business, but it's my entire marketing site. It's just, it's tough. I feel for those folks when that happens. It's just, it's so crippling, you know?
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, I'm very sympathetic as well, and I don't want to give the impression that I don't really feel for what these guys are going through or what Google App Engine, you know, that whole service. I've been through several production outages on software I've written, and it's very stressful. And just getting through it and bringing everything back up and making sure that it all works is an incredibly difficult thing to do under that level of stress. Yeah. But, you know, you kind of want to hold these providers to a higher standard. And you have to ask yourself, like, why are you, you know, Cloudflare is, for all intents and purposes, the DNS of the internet for the most part. I mean, they're a major, major, major provider. So when you have a 2-hour outage, I mean, you're screwing the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my question would be, what is it that you're doing to prevent this in the future? Because if you can't give me confidence that this platform that powers a significant percentage of the internet is not stable, then why would I stay with your platform? Yeah. You know, it makes me as a small service provider that relies on them look bad. And, you know, people have, like, I remember a little while ago when everybody was complaining about Drip's reliability and deliverability, they were having issues with other downstream or upstream providers. And, you know, your Drip, you don't have control over these things, but you rely on them as part of your infrastructure. What do you do? Because it basically causes your customers to get really angry, and then you lose trust and bleed customers as a result of that. You know, how do you work against that? You know, it's not like you have the engineering staff of Netflix and you can build Chaos Monkey and test your entire infrastructure against all these really wackadoodle scenarios. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just limits to what you're able to do. So yeah, I don't know. It's an open question.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think it's, you know, go with the big established players that are on the big platforms that hopefully are doing all the right things. You know, obviously not going with like these smaller players for something that's mission critical like that is important. You know, I heard the CTO of Slack at SaaS Talk last year gave a talk on kind of some of this stuff, and he said they consider themselves a utility, you know, like the power company, and try to have like utility level uptime. And this is ironic, like where Slack went down on Friday, I guess, for a couple hours. But
yeah, well, that's,
I mean, it happens to everybody. I mean, Facebook went down a couple months ago. Like, it just happens to everybody, and we all get pissy about it, but then we move on. Especially, you know, like, you're a free user, right, of Cloudflare. I'm a free user of Slack. If Slack goes down, I'm like, well, I'm getting what I pay for. You know, like, it should be up all the time, but when it goes down and you're a free user, I think you can only, you know, bitch and complain so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, you know, when Slack went down, I don't even know that I noticed because I just don't spend that much time on Slack. And so if it was down for a couple hours, you know, it didn't ruin my life or anything like that. But if like Stripe goes down and I'm missing 2 hours of payments, you know, that can really suck.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think it just sort of depends on the service itself. You know, Facebook goes down for 2 hours, I'm not going to lose a lot of sleep over that.
Thank
but,
God, right?
You know, my Cloudflare goes down, you know, that's a big deal when people can't reach my site because of their problems. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. The last quick thing for me is we were at WordCamp Europe last week. So, Dave, I heard your interview, your talk with Matt Medeiros, which was absolutely wonderful. And you had a lot more guts than I did to talk about some of those challenging things in WordPress. But We had a really nice time. Both of our developers came to Berlin like a day and a half before the conference, and we got to spend a little bit of time together, just us, you know, working and team building and stuff like that. It's really cool, and the conference was really good, you know, typical kind of WordPress stuff. But it was really good. Got a lot of good connections and things that we can kind of work going forward. So it was really nice.
Very cool. Yeah, and I wanted to just give a quick shout out to Jan Ausland. I apologize if I slotted your last name on that. And Luke Perry for sending follow-up emails about the WordPress discussion. It was great to have some interaction with you guys over email and talk more about that. And, you know, we actually got a lot of Twitter discussion after that as well. People were, you know, weighing in about how this really affected the community. And when you were at WordCamp Europe, you said that there was, you know, a little bit of drama there going on with Matt Mullenweg.
Oh, man, they roasted the guy. I mean, I think it's a pretty typical thing of, you know, he gives this kind of miniature state of the word is what he does at WordCamp US, but like this miniature presentation about what's going on with WordPress, and it was all about Gutenberg. And afterwards, I mean, people just lit into him about a lot of stuff, about Gutenberg, a lot of stuff about like transparency and the, you know, kind of conflict with automatic and how they're monetizing things through Jetpack and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, some of the people were just rude. I mean, you know, he's not God, right? He's not like the God of WordPress even, right? I mean, WordPress, even as kind of bizarre as their relationship is, like WordPress is bigger than him. And there's a lot of people that make the decisions. He's the one that like ultimately has to answer to all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I felt like some of the people that were giving him such a hard time were crossing the line, but it was just interesting to see, I guess.
Yeah, the community definitely has strong opinions about Gutenberg. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, we talked about all of that in the WordPress episode, so we don't need to rehash all of that. But did you get any takeaways from WordCamp Europe that you want to share here?
No. Yeah. No, you know, it's interesting. I didn't go to any talks. So my takeaway from WordCamp Europe was meeting people. Like I met Hugh Lashbrook, the guy that built Serious and Simple Podcast and the plugin we bought to kind of start Castos. So that was great. And just being able to hang out with Jonathan Danilo, our, you know, our developers and other people that I know of in the, you know, in the WordPress world, got to meet them and hang out. Brad Tunard from Delicious Brains and his team and all this kind of stuff that's the reason I went. And then, you know, trying to meet some of our potential future partners to do like marketing deals together and stuff like that. That's the whole reason I went. The WordPress specific stuff, I didn't really go to at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've heard the same thing about WordCamp US that, you know, most people, if you're going as a WordPress business person, where you're like your business is on WordPress, the talks don't have the same kind of value as if you're like an agency or you're going as, you know, maybe a community member or something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's fine. That's fine. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, man, today we're going to talk through an article from the Foundation about like a teardown of some Facebook ads. So they reviewed 100 B2B SaaS Facebook advertising campaigns and pulled away, I'll say, some nuggets. Dave and I are not going to talk through every last bit of this article because this article is 5,000 words probably. But
oh yeah.
But some kind of things, some takeaways maybe that we really pick out to say like this is really interesting and maybe we should dive, you know, we all should dive into this kind of thought some more as like a starting point to some stuff with our paid acquisition efforts.
Yeah. So let's just dive right in on some of the interesting bit here. So they, you know, we'll link to the article in the show notes so you can actually go through all 5,000 words yourself and draw your own conclusions, of course. But some of the interesting bits that I found when I was coming through this data here was, first of all, that they, you know, figured out which ads the 100 B2B SaaS companies are doing out there, because there's now this ability to go to the individual pages that these people are using to do their advertising from. So let's say, for example, your HubSpot. Now you can log into HubSpot's page and then find out, well, what ads are they running? What is their advertising campaign actually look like here? And so I actually did some competitive analysis on other email marketing tools in e-commerce to find out, are they running ads? What do those ads look like? What's the content of those ads? What are the images? What is the copy? All of that sort of stuff. So if you're not aware of that, I highly recommend digging in there because it's very instructive about what your competition is actually doing, if anything, on Facebook. I found that not everybody was doing something on Facebook, which was also interesting as well. But the first little tidbit that they came out with in this article here had to do with custom images. So the first question they asked was, what did these B2B SaaS companies use in their Facebook ads? So the choices were customer branded image, a video link, an unbranded stock image, or something else. And interestingly enough, 69% of these companies actually went through and either did a custom image or they added some kind of branding to the image. So they're not just out there on stockphoto.com or iStock or whatever those other companies that are out there, just digging stuff up and shoving them up on Facebook, which is kind of interesting because do you remember that conversation that we had with Moitza saying that, you know, if you just grab a stock photo, throw it up there, see how it works. Don't spend a lot of time on this, but obviously people are spending a lot of time on this.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is like, you know, what's the term, like separates the men from the boys, maybe, is like a lot of the B2B SaaS terms and audiences that these guys are going after, these companies are going after, are super competitive. And so just throwing up a stock image probably used to work and now doesn't because it's so competitive. And so they've obviously found that spending the extra time and money on like a branded image makes a difference because they're almost all doing it, which is amazing.
Yeah. And so obviously you have to kind of factor that into if you're doing Facebook ads, you know, if you're going to do variations, now you've got to decide, all right, do I have image variations as well? If so, what do those variations look like? So, you know, that's just adds more complexity to doing your Facebook ads out there. But I did think that was very interesting. And I think anecdotally, I probably had a strong sense that that was probably playing out anyway, because most of the time when I've seen ads pop up in Facebook, they generally have like something branded or something custom to make them stand out. Because the whole point is to try to grab somebody's attention since you don't have that much time to do it. And that's what they do to grab that.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's either this custom image or it's a video, which is definitely custom. So basically nothing is stock. And that's crazy. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But the video links only got 23%. So most people are just doing straight up images and they're not trying to do videos. There's another takeaway on the video ads that we'll get to here in a minute, and I won't spoil that one. But yeah, go ahead with the next point.
No, so I actually want to go to something they talk about generally with like the flow on Facebook. And I think this is really important when you think about the difference between like Facebook ads and Google AdWords, is you run a customer, you can run a customer all the way from like the very top of the funnel all the way to the bottom of the funnel in Facebook ads. Whereas typically in somewhere like AdWords, you're only dealing towards like the bottom half of the funnel. And they have a really cool like infographic here, looking at these HubSpot ads, looking at you have a stranger that you're trying to attract to your site to become a visitor. And once they're a visitor, you want to convert them, and attract and convert are both different ads. And you convert them into becoming a lead. And then you show a lead a different ad that has all different messaging and calls to action, all this kind of stuff to close them and to become a customer. And then you delight them to become a promoter. So the five like phases of a customer are a stranger, a visitor, a lead, a customer, and then a promoter. And the four kind of phases of ads that you run to those people are to attract, convert, close, and delight. And I mean, shit, Dave, this could be an entire podcast, not an episode, but an entire podcast talking about this. But I think that anyone who's just looking to run Facebook ads, especially to a cold audience that doesn't know you, you have to think about like the entirety of this. And it is daunting as someone who is running Facebook ads and is looking to run more. It is daunting to think about running four different sets of ads and the landing pages they go to and identifying the different customers and all of this shit. Like, it's no wonder that people like Moitza, who are like Facebook ads consultants that run all these for big companies, are really successful and can charge a lot of money, because this is really hard, complicated stuff to just get your head around the entirety of it, much less, you know, actually execute it. So.
Oh, absolutely. And what's even more interesting is that you pointed this out already, but I just want to emphasize this a little bit. This is very unique to the way that Facebook works. So you could use the Facebook pixel and sit there, and as they do certain actions, then flip around the ad that you're going to end up showing to them. Whereas if you're doing something like AdWords, you're doing it based on keyword search intent. So now you have to split up all the various keywords and decide, okay, if people are searching to this, they're a stranger, they're searching for this, they're a visitor, and then you'd have to do a retargeting pixel, which Google doesn't really do. You still have to do that through Facebook. And that's how you're going to end up doing this. But the whole thing could be done inside of Facebook, which I find is interesting. And I don't think that's by accident either. I think that they have specifically designed their advertising platform to make that work that way. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah. But I totally agree. Like, the example they showed in the article here is all about HubSpot. And this is not one person just sort of managing all of this ads. This is a whole full-fledged marketing team putting all this together. There's probably dedicated copywriters, somebody who's managing the creatives, and then somebody who's trying to set up and direct these campaigns. So this is definitely a little beyond what I would say is in the bootstrapper marketing wheelhouse. You've got to be a Facebook ads ninja.
So Dave, you referred to the difference between text and video ads for these B2B companies. And again, this might change. This might all vary for like B to prosumer or B to C companies. But this is really surprising to me. 76% of companies prefer to use text only ads as opposed to video. Everyone you talk to says, oh, video ads get you the cheapest impressions and all this kind of great stuff. Evidently not for the B2B SaaS market.
Yeah, and in fact, they talk about on here that HubSpot did some testing on video versus text, and the video got 20% more clicks, but it's not 100% clear that that is going to work the same way for everybody. So, I can't speak for everybody, and certainly the fact that 76% opted for the text probably indicates that most folks might feel similarly to what I'm about to say here. And that is, I don't have time to watch videos on Facebook about other businesses. I'm there for fucking cat videos, right?
Yeah.
And that ain't a cat video. That's a business. That's work for me. I don't want to do that right now. So obviously 1 in 4 people is like, oh yeah, I'll do some work while I'm on Facebook. But you know, 3/4 of the people are like, screw that. Where are my cat videos?
Yeah.
That makes intuitive sense to me. So, you know, stick with the text formats in there, that's for sure. Now, here's an interesting one that I was not expecting to have any kind of impact on this whatsoever. Emojis. Like, who would ever think to use emojis in the ads and then analyze whether these emojis are having an impact or not? I would be like, emojis, yeah, sure, use them, whatever. I don't think they're going to have a big deal or interest or whatever. But I guess only 16% of B2B SaaS companies are using emojis in their ads, but they are seeing massive increases in their conversions just having these things on there. They show an example on here where a company called Scoro is using a red flag in their emoji, and they're talking about it looks like a 2 to 3x increase, 2.5 increase on conversion rate or click-through rate, excuse me. So who would have guessed that, right? I mean, you look at these two ads and you're like, seriously, there's a red fucking flag on there.
Yeah.
And that's all it took? That's kind of weird.
Yeah, no, this is shocking to me. I mean, I just can't believe that makes such a big difference, but definitely something like to test, right? And that's an easy thing to split test between two ads to see what makes a difference. And that seems to be the thing with a lot of stuff that these ad experts say is, you know, get the basics down and then test everything and decide what works good for you and your audience and your business and all that kind of stuff, because it's probably different for everybody, right? Like, you and I could try emojis and it might be the opposite, but just something to test is probably the takeaway with that.
Yeah, I mean, it must be something about catching, you know, people's eyes, or just, you know, you have this wall of text you're scrolling through, and if it's a business ad, that's all text, since we already know that's the preferred format. Here's something that makes it jump out of the thing a little bit, makes it look a little more personal, more Facebook-y, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Because you're going to have lots of emojis in Facebook posts. So maybe that makes people stop because they're like, oh, wait, that might be something that's personal.
Yeah.
Interesting. Speaking of testing, this one really kind of surprised me. B2B SaaS companies, 83% of them did not have variations of their ad.
Which is the easiest thing to test, I feel like.
Oh, my God.
Testing a different audience and all this kind of stuff is like, custom audiences and pixels and all this kind of shit. But like, yeah, change your ad, change the copy, change the creative, all this kind of stuff is super easy to change. But I don't know. I don't know why they're not doing it, but that's
interesting. Yeah, I'm an ad idiot, but I always try to throw out a couple of them there to see, is there a preference? Is there something that looks different? You know, like try out some headlines, try out different copy, call to action. I mean, you know, I don't go overkill on it. Maybe I think the most I've ever had running at once was like 4 to 6 variations of an ad when I was doing some heavy testing with, Schedule Watcher. But yeah, I mean, this seems like a lost, missed opportunity. So if you're doing variations, you're in the magic 17% that are doing better at optimizing your ads, which that's just crazy.
Yeah, for sure.
So the last thing, there was a couple of other things at the very end here about, you know, strong visuals and stuff like that. But there was a specific example that is kind of funny because I've come across them in a variety of media at this point. And basically, if you're going to have an ad telling a story, like visually and even with video, becomes a clear winner to hooking your audience here and getting them to click for more. So the example that they give is Lucidchart. So are you familiar at all with Lucidchart, Greg?
Yep.
So Lucidchart has a bunch of videos, but I came across one that was about snakes. And if you have ever – if you've never seen this, I strongly recommend just going out and Googling Lucidchart SNEK, S-N-E-K, and you will find a very amusing video. And it's very kid-friendly as well. My kids – watch this video over and over and over, and now they're like, no step on snake, you know, danger noodles and murder spagurter, and they have all these funny names for the animals in there, and it's hilarious, and it's very much aimed at millennial and Gen Z terminology, but it's very accessible to everybody, and it totally leads you through this whole story, and at the very end they tie it together with their product. It's beautiful. And you know, I'm not saying that everybody's going to end up with the production quality of Lucidchart's videos here, but they are very creative. They're very shareable and they are very, very interesting. They're very engaging. Like, I've sat and watched this thing multiple times and I can sit here and quote it with my kids. And they had an example in here about, they were talking about hedgehogs. So they call them like spiky floofs and cactus hamsters and rollouts and hairbrush rats. I mean, just hilarious names, and you go through this whole thing and the narrator's reading it off at rapid fire pace, and it's just hilarious. But as a result of that, you know, you get an ad that is something that people want to share, and then it just kind of sticks this in the back of your brain about Lucidchart. So I can tell you right now, the next time I need a charting thing right here, Lucidchart's going to be at the top of my mind because of these stupid videos.
Yeah.
And you know, this is definitely advanced Facebook video adding. This is not an intro sort of thing here. And they've clearly had a lot of practice with it, because if you look at the Lucidchart video library, they've done a lot of these. So they've gotten really good at them. But just the notion of having a story that you can engage the audience with is very much in line with what Facebook wants you to do on the platform anyway. So it's very easy to get people to watch these things, and then at the end, if you can find a way to, you know, put your product in there in a seamless way, which Lucidchart has done an excellent job of, then it all kind of ties together, and it's funny and it's enjoyable. So I would say that that's something that people should look at as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is like talking about what Facebook wants you to do is, you know, Facebook really wants us to write ads that people engage with and share and reply to and like and all that kind of stuff. It helps you get lower cost per click and all this kind of stuff. And that's how they reward you for making good ads versus scammy or salesy ads or whatever. So this is, you know, a really savvy thing that they're doing to say, like, okay, part of our ad campaign, you know, mix needs to be not just things to promote our tool, but just to build brand equity and name recognition, all this kind of stuff. Yeah, it's totally like 301 level stuff, not 301 redirect, but like level three levels kind of stuff, to have the time and energy and kind of mental space to be able to pull these off. But if you can, I think it's great. So yeah.
Yeah. And you know, you can waste a lot of time watching these damn videos too. So.
There you go.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I think that's about it for us this week. Our one ask, as always, is if you're enjoying the show, if you could share it with someone else who you think would enjoy it as well. And if you have any questions for us or comments about what you're doing with Facebook ads or have seen out there in the Facebook adosphere, send us a message, podcast@roguestartups.com. And we'll see you next week.
And if you can, give us a better word than adosphere to use next time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.